Every so often, a news story emerges about the quality of medical care for American military veterans. The Department of Veterans Affairs, still universally called the VA, is frequently under pressure to do its job better. Our guest this hour has applied that pressure himself on many occasions. Ron Kovic tells the story of one protest, a takeover and a hunger strike at a senator's office in his new book, Hurricane Street. This is the same Ron Kovic profiled in the Oliver Stone, Tom Cruise movie Born on the 4th of July, based on Ron's book by the same name. This year marks the 40th anniversary of that book's publication. It has sold more than a million copies, and it sports a foreword by Bruce Springsteen. Welcome, Ron Kovic. Thanks for joining us.
That's great to be with you. Thank you very much, Jeff.
Let's start in the present day. Is the care of veterans any better now than it was 40 years ago?
You know, every VA or every hospital is a bit different. But let me give you an example. I think many citizens are aware of the fact the long waiting list problems at the VA hospitals around the country recently. But in my own particular experience with the spinal cord outpatient clinic in Long Beach, California. I'm in Southern California. This was the exact same hospital that we protested against in the spring of 1974 that led to the occupation of Senator Cranston's office and the 17-day hunger strike. I have noticed surprisingly improvements in this particular hospital. My feeling is that this hospital, the one that we had such great problems with back in the early 70s, could change, then hopefully changes can occur in other VA hospitals around the country. But we still have serious problems. Between 18 and 22 of our young Iraq and Afghan veterans returning from deployment commit suicide every day. That's unconscionable, and it's absolutely unacceptable.
What are some of the major issues you think that faces them? And this is a good place to start here, because the VA's issues are going to get a different complexion as more people come back from all the post 9/11 conflicts with different sets of injuries and different sets of psychological challenges.
Exactly. Yeah.
What is the VA nimble enough, you think, to proceed as well as?
What was that question again? Is the VA?
Is it nimble enough?
I mean, it can always improve, of course. I mean, we seem to be always ready to go to war, but never quite ready to accept the consequences of combat, except the fact that psychological wounds will return from that war, post-traumatic stress disorder. We have veterans who, are on the verge of giving up, on the verge of suicide in many cases, and they're told that they've got to wait. This is the wealthiest country in the world. I mean, we deserve our young men and women who serve this country, who wear the uniform, who in many cases risk their lives, deserve the very best care, not to be shuffled aside.
Ron Kovic, how have you tempered your anger over the years? I mean, you fought a war, you got wounded, you felt like you'd gotten forgotten by the system. I mean, how do you keep?
Well, I was very angry when I was a young man. I joined the Marine Corps out of high school in 1964. I wanted to serve my country. My mother and father had both served honorably during World War II, joining up both of them not long after Pearl Harbor, December 7th, 1941. And both of my uncles had served in the Marine Corps in World War II and in Korea. I grew up with a Marine Corps guidebook as a gift. I remember practicing saluting in front of a mirror when I was 9 years old. I was inspired by John F. Kennedy's call to service, ask not what your country can do for you, but ask what you can do for your country. I had the Sergeant Rock comic books. I watched the John Wayne movies. I couldn't wait to serve my country. In fact, I had been really, truly born on the 4th of July. That's my real birthday, July 4th, 1946. And I also came from Long Island. I grew up in a very patriotic community. And there was no question about service to country, for me at least, at the time. And I couldn't wait to join, and I joined the Marines. I volunteered not only for my first tour of duty in Vietnam, but I volunteered to go back a second time. Ironically, during the protests against the war, I was upset, and I couldn't understand why they were protesting the war at the time when I and others like me were had been in Vietnam and were sacrificing our lives. I had lost many friends, and I volunteered to go back a second time. Ironically, just a few years later, after being wounded and getting out of the VA hospital, I was to join the Vietnam Veterans Against the War. I was to protest against the very war that I sacrificed my body in, gave three-quarters of my body in, and I was arrested 12 times. I sat behind bars many times, many trials, like many Vietnam veterans and many Americans who chose a different path rather than supporting the war, chose to resist. Chose to question the authority, question the morality of that war, and I was deeply affected. I was shocked emotionally, physically. I was wounded on January 20th, 1968, just before the Tet Offensive. It was up in the DMZ, north of a river called Quaviette, and I was leading my squad of Marines across an open area toward a village when I was shot first on the right foot. The bullet went through the front of my foot. It blew out the back of my heel. I continued to try to move forward, only a few feet, and then I finally had to lay down in a prone position. I tried to return fire. My rifle was jammed in the sand. I started to get up, and just as I started to get up, I took a bullet through my right shoulder, a loud crack, almost sounded like a firecracker next to my right ear, and a tremendous shock of being hit by that bullet, the bullet going through my right shoulder, through my right lung, collapsing my right lung, and severing my spine, paralyzing me from my mid-chest down.
All right, Ron, we need to pick up the story the other side of a break. Ron, hang on a second. Ron, Ron Kovic is our guest. Back in the exchange in a minute.
I've been in this wheelchair.
Back on the Jefferson Exchange on the News and Information Service of Jefferson Public Radio. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. Our guest today is Ron Kovic, one of the best-known wounded veterans in American history. He is the author of Born on the 4th of July. There was the movie made with Tom Cruise about it, with Tom Cruise as Ron Kovic. Ron Kovic, on the 40th anniversary of that book, has written a new book called Hurricane Street about one of his protests, the takeover and a hunger strike at Senator Alan Cranston's office in Los Angeles many years ago. You can join us on the Jefferson Exchange at 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. Ron, sorry about the break running up against you there. Clearly, the memories are still very fresh to you.
Oh, not only myself, Jeffrey, but so many millions of others who have come home from that conflict almost 50 years ago, almost half a century ago. It's really quite amazing. I am so very grateful every single day to be alive. I'm so thankful. So many of my friends, so many of those in particular who were involved in the hunger strike in Senator Cranston's office in the spring of 1974, demanding to receive the decent care at the VA hospital. Many of them, as I write in the epilogue at the end of Hurricane Street, they've died. They've either committed suicide or so many precious lives wasted because of the trauma and the senselessness of war. How many of us, how many citizens, how many of your listeners actually understand when we send these precious young sons and daughters into combat, do we understand the consequences of what combat really does to human beings, physically, emotionally, the amputees, those who are traumatized physically, emotionally? For many years, I suffered with, as many, many of our returning veterans, not only from half a century ago, Vietnam, but now, presently, Iraq, Afghanistan, suffer every night anxiety attacks, nightmares, dealing with the stressors of having put in a very violent and dangerous situation. You know, when we make that commitment, we better be sure we know what we're doing. We better be sure we know that this is a commitment we must make, because if we're not sure, if we don't know what we're doing, we're wasting these lives, and we must not waste these precious lives. These, you know, I think it's very important that we think of these of our veterans as our own sons and daughters, and if we did, we'd be much more careful, much more thoughtful about risking their lives and wasting their lives. We would be much more thoughtful about these foreign policy decisions.
Ron, why do you call the new book, Hurricane Street, a work of memory and fiction?
Why do I call it that? Because if I had to think back over 40 years, I had to remember those 17 days as best I could. And I did the very best I could to remember the dates, and I remember getting a calendar. It took me about 3.5 years to write the book. And it was just a story I always felt after Born on the 4th of July and after writing 4th of July. It was a story that I always felt I wanted to tell, I needed to tell. I felt it was an important story, even though it might not ever end up in the history books. I felt that it was a story that should not be lost to history. And so as I began to assemble it, and I began to try my best to remember what happened during those days, I've got a pretty good memory, but I couldn't remember every detail. And so with fairness to the reader, I just felt that I needed to say this is a work of both memory and fiction. I remember the morning or the night that I thought of that sentence, because that is a true sentence to me. It is a work of my memory as best I can, and where I could not remember, I tried to imagine as best I could. I tried to recreate on those particular different days that I write about during the hunger strike, where paralyzed paraplegics and quadriplegics are laying on mattresses on a senator's office, risking their lives again. I tried to remember as best I could. So that's why I chose that expression.
I'm struck by some parallels, Ron. You say of 1974 that we had not been so polarized since the Civil War, but we sure feel pretty polarized now. I wonder how
isn't that ironic? You know, I was thinking about that the other day. I was thinking how, you know, I was just thinking, especially with the tragedy that happened, the tragedy of the last week, for that matter, in this country, in Minnesota, in Louisiana, and in Dallas, Texas. I thought of the trouble in the country last night, right now, happening in this country. I'm thinking back to the opening lines of the book off the top of my head. Revolution was in the air. The cities were burning as National Guardsmen patrolled the streets with fixed bayonets, taking sniper fire from rooftops. It was an extraordinary time. And I was thinking just yesterday, the day before, I was thinking, this is repeating itself again. You could read that opening to Hurricane Street, and you'd say to yourself, this is happening right now. This country is polarized terribly right now, and we've got to come together. You know, we've got to find a way, and I know we can. We're a better country than that. I know we can overcome these difficulties. If I could heal from the anguish and the agony of Vietnam, as many young men have been able to, and young men and women from Iraq and Afghanistan, if I could let go of that anger and that rage, if I could forgive, learn to forgive, and forgive myself, the country can do the same. I think we're going through a very painful period of catharsis right now. I think it's absolutely it makes sense why we're going through it, because we've denied, we've resisted, we've held back dealing with problems, very serious problems. You know, I was thinking last night of the Kerner Commission, which analyzed why these riots back in the late 60s were happening, what the problems were. And it said, you know, if we do not correct these problems, if we don't deal with this head on, we're going to repeat it again and again and again in dozens of other cities. And we see it happening now. I think America is at a period of great reckoning right now, in a period when it's got to face some very difficult truths.
Ron, we have some emails and calls for you, starting with an email from Joe in Talent. He writes, I was lucky when I came back from Southeast Asia to have 2 more years of enlistment left. This allowed me to decompress among others who had the same experiences, put it in perspective, and have resources to deal with any issues that came up. Even back then, emotional support from the VA was almost non-existent, so we relied on each other for help. Folks who came back physically injured got medical care, but it always seemed as though the effort was to push them out as fast as possible and let society clean up the mess. Usually that was taken up by fellow vets who tended and nursed their wounded brothers when the civilian establishment refused to. I think it's better today, but not much, Joe writes. We have the money to wage war, but will not pay for the consequences. It's a great national shame, frankly. That from Joe and Talent.
Well, that's eloquent. It's so beautifully said, and it's the truth. I mean, what could I add to that? Thank you for that contribution. I don't have anything to respond to that other than what he said is absolutely true. What you said, Joe, is absolutely true.
Ron, the circumstances that led to the takeover at Senator Cranston's office in L.A., the details of Hurricane Street, what were you in the VA hospital for that time, Ron?
I had a bed sore, and it's one of the challenges of being paralyzed, of being a paraplegic. This is multiple challenges. It's quite complex, as it is to this very day, to this very morning. Actually, I've got to go down to the VA later today for an outpatient clinic appointment. So I'm connected to that hospital. As many wounded physically, emotionally, are connected to the VA system for the rest of their lives. And I was in the hospital because of a bed sore. I'd taken a fall in a bathtub. This was in 73. I had fallen in a bathtub, and I had gotten a bruise, and I have no feeling from my mid-chest down. And this is one of the really great challenges. Once you get a sore, any kind of a mark on your skin, you've got to watch it carefully. You've got to check your skin, parts of your body that you can't feel. You know, I remember when I was at the St. Albans Naval Hospital, and I'd just come back from Vietnam. I'd just been wounded. I was so young and innocent. I was only 21 years old. And they got me up in the chair for the first time. I was very weak. And I had been in the intensive care ward in Da Nang. I had been in and out of morphine every couple of hours for a week, and I had somehow survived that place. I'd been given the last rites of the Catholic Church. They didn't even think I was going to make it, but I made it, and I got out of that hospital, and I left Vietnam. I went to the Yokosuka Naval Hospital in Okinawa, and then later made my way slowly, Alaska, Virginia, and up back to my home area in New York on Long Island. And I remember they put me in that chair for the first time. I nearly fainted, and I was pushing around the ward, and I was still very, very weak, and struggling to come back from a terrible wounding, as many young men around me were. And I remember I went over to look out the window for the first time, and it was winter. It was February, late February of 68, and I'm looking out the window, and I smell something burning, and I look down, and my toes were next to a very hot sort of old-fashioned radiator, and my toe was being burnt, and I didn't even know it. I didn't feel a thing, but I smelled it, and so that's when I realized I've got a challenge ahead of me, and that's when I realized this was going to be a much bigger challenge than anything that I have dealt with in my life. So the bed sores. Being extremely vigilant, not only that, but I my level of injury was so high that I have no balance, so I have to be careful not to fall out of the chair. Also, I have a catheter inside of me. I have a rubber bag on the side of my leg so I could go to the bathroom. I mean, when something like that happens, you can't help but go through a depression. You can't help but struggle with the question of, do I want to keep living with this? And all of us who sustain these types of wounds, I mean, we have to make that decision in the end. And sometimes we go back and forth. Sometimes we're ready to give up, and somehow as we teeter on the edge and get close to leaving this world, we find a reason for living. Maybe we meet a person. Maybe someone smiles at us, and it gives us something to hope for and something to believe in, keeps us going one more day. But So I found myself back in the Long Beach VA with a bed sore. I was on a gurney, having to push myself around the wards for 93 days. It took that long to heal the bed sore. And it was during that period that I realized there were many other Vietnam veterans, wounded like myself, paraplegics and quadriplegics, who felt that the treatment was very poor. They were very upset with the way they were being treated. I mean, they had risked a lot. They had sacrificed, more than most people could ever imagine. They had sustained catastrophic wounds, in fact. And so they, all of us, we started to meet in back of the paraplegic wards, and it just started with a small group of us, and we eventually decided to form a group called the Patient Workers' Rights Committee. And we started having meetings every Thursday night in back of the wards. And we started with 4 or 5 people, 10 people. And eventually our meetings swelled to 100, 125. And one night we had 150 people. The powers that be at the hospital, the head of the VA, they sent the security guards in their vans. They took photographs of us. They must have been threatened by us. But all we wanted was to be treated like human beings. All we wanted to be was to be cared for properly. We had a few nurses who had the courage to speak out at our meetings, doctors, not many, one who said he'd speak out, but he was going to be very careful. He didn't want to lose his job. But we had a few of the aides and caregivers on the wards who had the courage to join us and begin to speak. Eventually, the Patient Workers' Rights Committee fell apart. And I went back to New York. I got out of the hospital after almost 3 months and organizing. One other thing I want to say while organizing, I bought a tape recorder at the hospital PX and cassette tapes, and I hid the tape recorder under my pillow, and I pushed around the wards on my stomach, and I would interview the different patients, in particular on the spinal cord injury ward, and I began to put together a case against the VA. And we had a press conference. We brought a lot of cameras down, and initial media support. And so eventually I left the hospital. The Patient Workers' Rights Committee fell apart. And a year later, while attempting to write Born on the 4th of July, at a small beach house called a little shack almost called it was on at 24 and a half Hurricane Street. I tried to write Born on the 4th of July. I couldn't quite get started. And one night, late one night, when I couldn't seem to write anything more, I started to write down the idea of a new organization. And what I did was I started the idea of the American Veterans Movement, which I eventually brought to the VA, and we organized a bunch of the guys, and then we went down, reluctantly, to Senator Krantz's office with the initial plan, Jeffrey, of just simply sitting in and demanding a meeting with Senator Cranston. Well, that sit-in lasted one night, and that eventually escalated into a full-blown hunger strike by paralyzed Vietnam veterans, which eventually was to touch the nation.
We have a couple of calls for you. Let's go to Julie in Ashland. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Ron Kovic, the author of Born on the 4th of July and Hurricane Street.
Thank you so much. Thank you. I am so appreciative of you, sir, of the book that you wrote and the movie that was made thereof. And I've asked our library to obtain it for our shelves. I asked 20 years ago. I'm not sure if it's there yet. But I wanted to say what I've noticed. My age is 63, and when I saw the movie, I was probably 20. I came out of that movie just totally transformed. And my bubble popped just like yours did. And I began to see the world differently from there on. And I one thing I noticed, I've been a teacher, a private piano teacher, so I've worked with people one-on-one quite a bit, and families. And I've seen that, looking back, what really happened there was 50,000-plus men, good men with good values that were handed down from the previous generation. Those men were removed from our world, from our society, and there was no passing on of those values to the families. And it broke down the family structure. There was no head of the family to take care of the children and give them direction in life. And I hear your pain and appreciate what you've been through, and that you actually have the courage and energy to write books. And I would encourage you to write a book that promotes, you know, healing this and getting men that have been in the war that still remain to get beyond the pain and back to those values that were so disillusioned by what they'd been through and what you'd been through. But still, you carry those values from your upbringings, and those need to return to our society.
And that's beautifully said, well said. And, you know, in fact, I'm working on that very book you're talking about. When I finished Hurricane Street, there was this whole period where I had to work with the editor in New York, and I'd been writing for 3.5 years, and I had to do something, so I started working on the new book, and the book is definitely a movement toward healing, and that healing has taken place within me. I do not feel that anger. I feel hope. I feel I have, as I say, I have forgiven myself, and I've forgiven the others. I've been transformed by that war, and I think that.
Okay, Ron, hang on a second. Ron, we have a break coming up. We have to do this again. So, Hurricane Street and Born on the 4th of July, the books by Ron Kovic. He's our guest on The Exchange. Back on The Exchange with Ron Kovic and you in a minute five. Final segment on today's Jefferson Exchange. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. Our guest today is Ron Kovic, the Ron Kovic of Born on the 4th of July. He wrote the book. Tom Cruise played Ron Kovic in the movie, and on the 40th anniversary of the publication of that book, Ron is out with a new book about the demonstration that he organized at Senator Alan Cranston's office in California 42 years ago. It is remembered in a book called Hurricane Street. You can join us on the Jefferson Exchange, 800-838-3760 by phone. Email is jx@jeffnet.org. So, Ron, you sounds like you really do come from a place of hope and optimism now, which is a far cry from where you were 40-plus years ago.
It really makes a lot of sense. You know, when people come up to me today, especially young veterans, come up and say, well, what can I do? I said, you know, the most important thing is it's so simple, never give up, never, ever give up, no matter how frustrating, no matter how painful, no matter how many nightmares and difficult nights you're going through, no matter how humiliating or how defeated you feel, don't ever give up. I think because I didn't give up, I was able to finally leave that darkness behind and reach that new beginning, that place of hope and that forgiveness. And, you know, you can call it what you want, political, spiritual, maybe a little bit of both. But somehow I was able to get to the other side. Somehow I was able to say, I was able to feel grateful, not so cheated or so much in pain, but thankful for every single day. Thankful not for the body that I'd lost, but for what I still had left, for the fact that I had a mind and I had a heart and I had something to continue to give back to my country, continue to contribute to this world. I could still write, and hopefully I could write words that would inspire, words that would help people to understand. I think it was really important for me to try to explain to people the truth of what I really went through, what war was really all about, not the romantic versions of war and not the video games, but the true consequences of war, emotionally, physically. You know, we know that it's the combatants who come home wounded, but what about the mothers and the fathers? War, the awfulness of war has such a terrible ripple effect. It affects so many people all throughout the community, where a young man or a young woman returns home wounded from the war. Perhaps it's their girlfriend. Perhaps it's the high school coach who coached them only a few summers before. The coach or the teacher, or perhaps it's someone from down the block. But it took me a while to realize it wasn't just about me being wounded. America was wounded by Vietnam, and America is wounded by these conflicts. People are wounded in many different ways, and those wounds, they take a long time to heal, if they heal at all. It's a very difficult journey to be wounded, to lose so much, to be so terribly, feel so terribly lost, and to somehow find a way to go through that, to find something better, to open up a new door, to begin again.
Let's take another call. Here's Bill and Eugene. Thanks for waiting. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Ron Kovic.
Hi, thanks a lot. I was lucky. I won the best lottery in the world. I didn't have to go to NAM. And I have a couple questions. What is the correct number of veterans that died in Vietnam? And what is the correct number of veterans that served in Vietnam that have committed suicide to date? And I have another question as far as how many people have died in the war that Bush started, Bush W. Bush there, and how many people that have served in that war, which I believe is our longest war, have committed suicide?
Well, it's a very important question, and I can't give you the exact figures. I wish I could. How many died in Vietnam? Close to 60,000, 58,000. I don't know how many of you. I visited the Vietnam Memorial in Washington, D.C. on two different occasions. It's a very powerful experience to look at all those names, all those young men who could have lived, who could have contributed to this society. And you talk about the suicide among Vietnam veterans and Iraq veterans. Several thousand people of our men and women died in Iraq and Afghanistan. And I remember hearing a statistic when I came home years ago concerning Vietnam, that more veterans committed suicide than were killed in the war. After the war in Vietnam ended, there were more suicides among those who returned than who were killed, than all the names on the wall in Washington, D.C. And I'm not surprised at all, tragically, that perhaps more veterans will have committed suicide from Iraq and Afghanistan than were killed in the war outright. It's another thing. Do we as citizens understand the consequences of combat? Do we understand what it really means to say, yes, send them off to war? We do it so flippantly. We don't even think about it. We see the polls come out in the beginning of these conflicts. We see the flags being waved. We hear the rhetoric of going off to war. Even the newspapers and the media gets behind it. And there are very few voices initially that resist these policies, that question them, that say, wait, hold on a second. Wait a second. What are we getting ourselves into? Well, I'll tell you, one of the most important things we as citizens can take from these conflicts is learning the lessons of these conflicts. Rather than denying, rather than turning our heads, rather than saying, that was then, this is now, to be able to say, I learned a valuable lesson, regardless of how tragic, how defeated we might feel, what a humiliating experience it might be, and you could apply this to life as well. Mm-hmm. There's always something that can be learned, always something positive that can come out of these experiences if we only take the time to reflect and to look.
Ron, when you were organizing the vets at the Long Beach VA hospital, they were not just Vietnam vets in that hospital. What kind of static did you take from the World War II era guys, for example?
Well, some of them are very supportive. I'll say that initially. Some of them attended our meetings, not just the paraplegic wards, but, one of the ironies was as we began to hold our meetings in back of the paraplegic wards in the, and this was back in 73, prior to the takeover of Senator Cranston's office, which was ironically on Lincoln's birthday, February 12th. But the year before, when I was a patient at the Long Beach VA and when we had organized the Patient Workers' Rights Committee, and holding these meetings, World War II veterans would attend. But in some cases, both World War II and Korean veterans, you have to understand the atmosphere in the country at the time, the war was just ending. The last Americans were returning home from Vietnam that spring. And the country was deeply polarized. The country was split. As I wrote in the beginning of Hurricane Street, not since the Civil War had our country been so divided. And that applied to the hospital as well. I mean, the fact that I organized these men and that we were just questioning our treatment, World War II and Korean veterans were calling me names, hippie, communist, all sorts of threats against me. Actually, while I was organizing, a veteran came up to me and said that someone was planning to put poison in my water pitcher. I mean, it was outrageous. Here I was trying to heal in a VA hospital, and I was wondering whether I was going to survive, if somebody was going to take my life simply for trying to improve the conditions in that hospital. So there was a split. There were, you know, there was a very contentious situation. World War II veterans and Korean veterans who supported the war and who were aware of the fact that they had seen me on TV. They had known that I had protested against the war very passionately. I'd been protesting for several years prior to being a patient that year, and they didn't like me. They did everything they could to try to stop me from speaking and from organizing. So it was a very difficult atmosphere to organize in for me. I didn't feel particularly safe. And when I finally did leave and go back to New York for that summer of 73, I left with a great relief that I was finally out of that place, even though I had been empowered by the fact that we had organized a bunch of us. You have to understand, so many of us in that hospital, in that particular moment in history, felt we had lost the war, we felt defeated, we had been paralyzed, we had sustained catastrophic wounds, and we wondered if we even had a life. We struggled emotionally. We might not have articulated it outright, but deep down inside, we were struggling with the desire whether or not we deserved to live or not. And so, in the midst of all of that, we found strength in our coming together. We found strength in our meetings, as simple as they were. And we had no idea, I must say, at the time, that those small meetings in the back of the paraplegic ward would eventually lead to reaching millions of Americans with the message that we needed help, that we needed to improve these conditions. We had no idea. I think that's very important. You never have you don't realize the difference that you, as an individual, you, as a few people together, can make. You can move mountains. You can literally affect history. If you're lucky enough, if you live long enough, Jeffrey, you can write about it someday and actually hold that book in your hand and think to yourself, I can't believe that not only did I participate in this extraordinary event, I actually took the time to write about it. Now I'm holding that book in my hand. It's a great feeling of satisfaction, I must say.
One of the goals of the takeover of Senator Cranston's office was to get to meet with the head of the VA, who finally did come out to meet with you. There was one false start, but then he finally got there and talked to you. And what did that accomplish ultimately?
Well, symbolically, it was very important. The head of the VA at the time was Donald Johnson. And that was our main demand during the hunger strike. You know, initially, if you get a chance to read the book, initially you'll see we wanted to meet with Senator Cranston, but he was actually very supportive of us. When we sat in his office on that particular day, he was still in Washington, D.C. He was on a very important Veterans Administration. It's now Veterans Affairs, but back then it was VA Administration Hospital Committee. He was up for re-election. We calculated all of that. We knew that we'd probably be able to stay in the office. We weren't sure, but we also knew that if the police arrested us and dragged us out of that office, it would not look good for the senator. So, but he was very supportive. And then Donald Johnson, the main demand began. We demand to meet with the head of the VA, Donald Johnson. We will not will not eat another thing. We will not leave this office until he meets with us, agrees to meet with us. Well, he came out, and as I said, symbolically, it made the front page of the Los Angeles Times. It was a victory, if but a media victory. I mean, people realized that we had won that strike. It was great for our morale, and promises were made. It was I'll use the word again, a very contentious meeting when he finally did come out to meet with us on the 13th floor, Senator Cranston's office. He finally took that 30-second elevator ride. He came and met with us, and there was shouting, and then finally he got to speak, and we got to speak, and eventually he left making certain promises. This was, if I could set the particular historical period, this was during the President Nixon was our president.
For a few more months, yeah.
The Watergate hearings, and this was in the spring, and by August, I believe it was, President Nixon would eventually resign from office. He'd leave office. Was being threatened with impeachment, and he'd finally leave office. But President Nixon actually sent Donald Johnson out to meet with us a second time. You know, he came out the first time, and
right.
He went down to the 7th floor below our 13th floor senator's office. He went to the 7th floor regional office, VA office, and he refused to take a 30-second elevator ride and meet with us. He insisted that we, the hunger-striking Vietnam veterans, paralyzed veterans, go down and meet with him in the 7th floor office. We were weak. We were tired. One of our paraplegics had already been, Nick Enders had already been taken away
yeah.
to the Westwood VA hospital.
Ron, I'm sorry. We need to wrap it up here.
We were in no condition to meet with him.
Ron Kovic is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. His latest book is called Hurricane Street. This was a follow-up by 40 years to the original Born on the 4th of July. Can't thank Ron Kovic enough for joining us today on the Exchange.